Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Chris Gray, and I'm the immediate past president of the American Council of the Blind. Many of you on ACB Radio have heard my voice before, and I am seated at a long table after the first day of the World Blind Union 7th Quadrennial Assembly in Geneva, Switzerland, and I'm surrounded by a distinguished group also of past presidents. And if I might say by way of introduction, I believe there's something unique that one comes to understand during a presidency of a small organization, a medium organization, a large organization, in this case, a world organization. We're here today to listen to the observations, the thoughts, the learning and the knowledge of virtually every past president of the World Blind Union. It's truly an honor to be here, to be a part of this. But as my experience with the WBU is more limited than some, and as we are joined today by the Chief Executive Officer of WBU, a person with many, many years of international experience, I'm going to turn the floor over to Dr. Penny Harton. She's going to introduce you to the presidents, talk with them, ask them questions, and we'll get into a freewheeling, fun conversation. Penny?
Okay, Chris, thank you very much, and hello to our listeners around the world. Because this is the 7th General Assembly of the World Blind Union, and in fact is on the eve of the 25th anniversary of the World Blind Union, we thought it represented an ideal opportunity for us to meet with the past presidents of the WBU who have helped to shape the history of the WBU during the past 25 years, to get their reflections on what they believe the WBU has contributed, some of the challenges that we face, and what our role should be in the future. We have with us this afternoon Sir Duncan Watson, who was president from 1988 until 1992. And Sir Duncan Wilson is from the United Kingdom. I'm sorry.
Oh, don't worry.
Sir Duncan Watson, my apologies.
I answer to many.
Sir Duncan Watson from the United Kingdom. I've already made my first faux pas. And from 1992 to 1996, David Blythe from Australia. From 1996 to 2000, Dr. Euclid Harry from Canada. And from the year 2000 to 2004, Kiki Nordstrom from Sweden. We unfortunately were not joined by Sheikh Abdullah Al-Gamin, who until just a few days ago did in fact intend to join us here as well, but he was unexpectedly unable to come with us. So my first question to all of you as past presidents, and I really want to thank you for taking the time to share your thoughts with us, is if you can share with us what you believe, based on your experience with the WBU and the time you've spent, has been the most significant contribution of the World Blind Union to the lives of blind and partially sighted persons around the world. And Sir Duncan, because you're the most senior president here, at least in terms of seniority of being past president, could we start with you, please?
Well, I suppose I go back to the beginning of things, way back before Riyadh almost, when the EBU was formed in 1984. The first jobs that we had were, there were two organizations representing blind people. We had to merge them into one organization so blind people could speak with a single voice. From there, we had to move to ensuring that that voice was recognized by institutions like the United Nations and its various agencies who accorded us representation. At that time, we didn't have representation in our own right. We were a member of ICOD, which was an amorphous mass of organizations of disabled people, whereas Disabled Peoples International were then accorded their own representation. So the first two things we did were to establish ourselves as one organization and to establish ourselves with the United Nations as being the organization to speak for blind people. And you heard today how We had consultative status with these various organizations, which give us the right to speak, and that took an awful lot of getting, I can tell you.
Thank you. Who wants to go next? David Euclid? What do you think? Yeah. Okay. David?
I would support what Sadaka said. I think, quite frankly, one of the big things that has happened within the World Blind Union has been the improvement in the status of women within the organisation. I think in its early days we were bereft of women participants. We didn't have many at all. But nowadays they're quite commonly here, and I attended a part of the Women's Forum on Saturday, and I was very happily surprised to see the calibre and the quality of the contributions that were being made by some of our female members.
Okay, thank you. Euclid.
Well, thank you, and hello to everyone out there. My first thought is that galvanizing the blind of the world and the visually impaired of the world to have a voice, one voice, with force and effect wasn't going to be an easy accomplishment given the diversity of 160 countries and the fact that we are all individuals and our organizations of and for the blind are unique and different, and we are not immune to the broader political process in the world. So we had to find a way of getting a large enough tent with open minds and hearts to include everybody. And this broadcast today and this recording is not so important that it is the living past presidents, and we're all living, that would not have had this vehicle or this means to get the message out there. Even 10, 15 years ago, there were certainly world networks a long time ago, but the World Blind Union had no access to that sort of voice that could instantaneously reach maybe 10, 20 million people who have these devices to receive this. So I think the power of that communication is going to change an awful lot of things in the World Blind Union. Mm-hmm. And so I'll let it rest there for the moment. But I think the most single largest contribution, because I'm asked all the time, as all of you are, so what is the World Blind Union? What do you do? And nobody knows sometimes whether we're a labor organization or what are we. And I've always got one short standard answer. I say to people, we have become the United Nations of the blindness business. That's who we are. That's what we do. And we've just got to be more proactive in doing it.
Mm. Well put. Thank you. Kiki.
When it's difficult, but can I hook on where Euclid ended? United Nations. I like that idea that we are the United Nations of blind people. I think that during the term I was president, I think that the work with the UN was one of the most important. And at that time, or a year after I was elected, the work of the convention finally started. And I think that was great that we could have skills in our group and opportunities to play a role, and an important role, and also take a seat or take a lead in the drafting of the convention. That, I have to say, is one of the best, maybe, so that happened during that time. But on the other hand, I'm also very proud of what the previous, during Euclid's time, I think it was, when we decided to re-establish the union in six regions. I think that was a successful decision politically, and for other reasons, it has been a very strategic decision to make. And I think the old region works very well now. I remember when I was new in this in this union, it was very difficult to sort of get some up on the track to follow, in particular with the Middle East. Now they are on and eager mm-hmm. to take part. And now we have the president from Jordan as a regional president for the Asian Blind Union. That's mm-hmm. remarkable. I'm very proud of that decision that mm-hmm. was made and coming mm-hmm. to force during my term.
Yeah.
Of course, I like the figures we heard today, that 40% of the delegates are women. That's a great achievement, and I'm very happy for that.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, we've had a real coming together over the 25 years. I'd like you to share with us because you have there is so much knowledge and wisdom and experience in this room. What do you see as some of the major challenges that the WBU will need to tackle during the next 5 to 10 years? You know, obviously we can't go out 25 years because who knows what the future will be. But in the time of what we can predict, what you see as some of the challenges, and who would like to start?
Well, I'll start as I've started before. I'll start again if you like.
Sure.
I thought mm-hmm. initially that it was going to be difficult to say what the challenges were, but I think having sat through today's proceedings, which I thought were extremely well run and organized and very informative, that there can only be one priority, which is the implementation of the Convention on the Rights of Disabled People. That has to be the priority. All right, 30-odd countries have ratified it. I don't know who they are. I suspect they're probably small countries. The United States, we know, hasn't. I don't think my own country's ratified it. I don't know about the larger countries in Europe. Small countries will ratify it. Mm-hmm. The problem will be to get big countries to ratify it. And I think we need to design programs. And I think Colin put it fairly well when he was speaking on behalf of the European Blind Union this morning, when he said that, you know, this was the great thing for the organization, and they had to develop systems to monitor and advance the process of implementation of this convention. And linked with that, he also coupled the development fund for work in countries which were less well off than other countries. And I think going back to that, we really do have to continue our work and accentuate our work, strengthening organisations of blind people in the member countries, the local organisations to work, equip them to work through regional organisations so that they can have their say in things like strategic plans in the early stage and not when they're completely formulated. So I think, you know, there's plenty of work to be done, but we don't have to apologise for what we've done in the last 25 years, because the way we've advanced from the international standard rules to the convention is absolutely remarkable. There was no way in 1993 that we could get a convention, but you've got one now after 15 years very hard work, and I think the organisation justifies its existence on that alone and nothing else.
I think the other factors that we have to overcome is the problem still within the organisation is that you have to have an organisation that can afford your participation at the top level of the organisation. And until such time as we can overcome that, we will always be in a position of not being able to fully access the talents that exist right throughout our membership. And those countries that cannot afford the funding of officers and people within the organisation are always at a disadvantage, and I believe the organisation is at a disadvantage because we don't access their talents. And it's a major issue, I believe, that financial sustainability has to be created, and to even further the implementation of the CRPD. Because, as Colin Lowe said today, they have to put in some funding or create funding to help countries in Eastern Europe and Central mm-hmm. Europe. Well, Africa, Asia, Latin America are all in the same boat, mm-hmm. and unfortunately they don't always have countries that can put in those sort of funds to help, and so it is up to the World Blind Union to find that way. And I believe that is a major issue that's facing us, and it will continue to face us until such times as we can overcome it.
Thank you. Who else?
Well, I think David's got a point in terms of the financial viability. It always comes to money. However, I see it in a broader context that however it's addressed, I think a major challenge for the organization is going to be inclusiveness. We say we have 600 member organizations in 140 countries. But I think that it's a patient process. As Sir Duncan said, things were achieved in the last 15 years that might have been unimagined through the UN and other things. However, to me, 25 years in the life of an organization is really not very long in the scheme of things at a global level. So if it takes another 10 to 20 years to really get inclusiveness, to break down these financial obstacles that we have created as an organization. So the solution has to come from within the organization because they become means of keeping people's voices and votes and input out of the organization. And we've got to, I think, address that, and I see that as a very major priority in the next short while. The short while could take 5 to 10 years to put these things in place. I also want to comment on the fact that it was only 14 years ago in Cairo when I think someone said, David was there and Sir Duncan was presiding, I think, we had something like 17 women in the delegations. Mm-hmm. We started the forums for blind women. We've just had the fourth here. Someone said to me last evening, maybe the blind women's forums have now fulfilled their purpose. Maybe we need to think of some other format because the fact that someone said that 40% now of the delegates voting here this week are going to be our women. I know it's not 50%, but at this rate, it will be 60 and 80%, so be it. And so it shows that that kind of inclusiveness has been achieved. The promotion of Braille literacy, which in fact we have heard a great deal even today, as everybody is enthused. And if the WBU, through its member organizations, can seize the 2009 opportunity on the bicentennial of the birth of Louis Braille and get that message out to the world, we're going to create, again, unimagined opportunities for Braille and for Braille literacy and the empowerment of people that we know leads to employment and to economic security. So I think that's the last issue, I think, challenge for me is going to be how we're going to get affordable and accessible technologies in the hands of so many people in the world. With 90% of children that are blind not in school, and we know how many others are in circumstances of poverty, and when we have a wonderful machine that costs $2,000-$3,000 that's going to do all the things that people need for reading, print, and navigation, and so on. But the big issue is to probably 98% of our membership, it's out of reach.
Yeah, that's right.
I guess so. Were televisions out of reach at one time? Mm-hmm. So somehow the WBU cannot do this, but with the 50-some exhibitors that are going to be here this week, which is double and triple the numbers we've had in the early years, we've got to keep getting that message to them that, yes, we welcome you, and we will welcome you even prospering in some cases. Mm-hmm. However, there's got to be a more level playing field. Yeah. And I say that as a member of one of the more major companies. But the fact is, that I know that until people have access in their hands of affordable and accessible technologies. So I think the WBU has those and probably dozens of other challenges, many of we've heard of today on children mm-hmm. and on a lot of other things, but I'm sure Kiki will add to the list.
Yes. And over to you. Okay, Kiki, add to that list.
I think that being a president of the World Blind Union needs that you have some political interest. I mean, at least to drive over blind people's political issues. And therefore, I will say, as a good politician, I don't agree with Euclid. I don't think that why we should turn down a system that has proved worked for women. I can tell that if we are not having a forum or some kind of a meeting ground for women, there will not be any more women there. We will drop the figures. I predict that. And mm-hmm. I've seen it in so many mm-hmm. other situations. So be careful when you make mm-hmm. such a decision. Mm-hmm. I promise that could be a problem otherwise.
Yeah. I don't think any such decision has been made at this point. So I think we... Yeah. Sure. No. Fair enough. Okay.
Incoming, but we may do it in other ways.
Yeah. So do you have other challenges, Kiki?
You wanted to stimulate discussion.
Yeah, that's it. He got your attention. I can see that.
I think I will hook on and agree with you, Kid, also, of course, with all the others. But I will agree on that. For me, I think education is one of the biggest challenges we have, including all this with Braille technology and everything. But the challenge is not education as such, because I don't think that World Blind Union alone can change that. But education should be done in the way that we decide it should be, because now are there other people around telling how the education should be done and performed for children who are blind and visually impaired. And we know that the educational level and the level of skills have dropped, in particular to some countries that have practiced inclusive education for very long. I think that we too should take that as a challenge. See what kind of education do we want children to have, and mm-hmm. how should it be performed? That is a duty for World Blind Union.
Okay, thank you. Well, we have some wonderful challenges presented to us. I have one last question for our panel here, and I'm sure it will stimulate just as much lively discussion, but it's in your view, what do you believe is the most significant or important role that you think the WBU could and should play that would be of most benefit in the lives of blind and partially sighted persons around the world? Who would like to go first?
Well, I seem to have gone first.
Okay.
I seem to have gone first most of the way. I went back out. I mean, all these things are obviously important, and they're of differing importance in the various regions of our organisation. What's important to a European may differ quite significantly from what's important to an African, and even within Africa, certain states are more developed than others. So I do think that we must realise probably that our organisation, the WBU, exists to help these organisations, to draw them out, to make them more effective on the ground, because the more effective they are, the more money they will raise. It is important that we have money, but I suspect that it's very much easier to raise money for, shall we say, blind causes within member countries than it is to raise it for international blind work. And I think that we should have strong organisations who should have their say. And when we were talking about the strategic plan today, it occurred to me that, maybe they have, but we should have smaller national plans for Africa, for Asia, mm-hmm. for East Asia mm-hmm. Pacific. Their needs are all are all different. And,
right. And some regions have started to do that, but that's a good point. Yeah.
Sorry?
I said some regions have actually started to do that, so but that's a really good point to raise.
I think uh-huh. So. And even taken to its logical extreme, countries could have their own small mm-hmm. national plans which they mm-hmm. could feed into the mix.
Mm-hmm.
We're all for involving as many people as possible in our uh-huh. work, and I think we've got to be careful not to impose things from the top down, but to make them flower from the bottom up. I'll leave you with that.
I go along with what Duncan says there, that I see WBU as an umbrella.
I go along with what Duncan said there. I see the organisation as an umbrella body that deals with the items like the United Nations and other major international bodies which do have an effect on our lives. But it does have to show leadership through the regions and from the regions through the sub-regions and down into the countries themselves. But to me, I still believe that that we will not achieve our goals for all until all can participate. And that, to me, is the crucial area of facing the issues. I notice in my own region, in the East Asia Pacific, we've got the largest nation on Earth, population-wise, and I'd say we've probably got the smallest as well. I think Niue was probably got a population of about 200 or something. But they're 200 individual people, and it's a matter whether you've got 1 million blind people in your country or you've got 10. They're still individuals and they still need assistance and they still need help if they're not in the mix of getting an education. I believe that that we do need to work much more with organisations that can ensure or can assist in reducing the cost of equipment. I agree with what Euclid said there before. You know, $2,000 mightn't sound much to some people, but it would feed a family for a whole year in some parts of the world. And they're not going to get a CCTV or a braille display or even $10,000 for a real good one. They're not going to get that. And we have to find a way that they can get some of these things. And we can't accept the fact that we often hear from educators, look, we'll do it with voice only because we can get more people done that way. That's not acceptable. And my view is that Braille is essential and Braille must be around as long as sighted people use a notepad and pen. Mm. When they do away with a notepad and a pen, we can do away with Braille.
Mm.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Who? Euclid, Kiki?
Well, let me just finish and give Kiki the last word.
Where's
that microphone? Well, thank you. From one author to another, I want to tell the world that. With thank you to Sir John and the RNRB. The book on the first 25 years will be at this convention in a day or two. And it will tell its own story of all of us, as we've told it, and as it has been put together with the aplomb and wisdom of Sir John and others, I'm sure. And within that book, my chapter has to deal with, I called it 1,500 days, which is about the time that you get in this office, since you only serve one term. I think that the contribution of the World Blind Union is always, it's hard to sum up in a short story, but I do have a very short story that I think will make the point that I see. And it had to do with early in my term with a visit to Mumbai with Rajendra Vyas and a reception that had been organized at the radio club that was to be 1 hour from 5 to 6 o'clock. And I arrived there
fully confident that it wasn't going to be a whole lot longer than that at the end of the day. And I think it was probably getting on for 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, when most our hosts had long gone. People had come from hundreds of miles. The lineup was about 30 people who wanted to meet the president of the World Blind Union, wanted to speak to me, wanted to discuss their issues, the needs, and they were everything from senior medical ophthalmologists to blind people from villages and so on. Why do I tell you that story? Well, because I think that the World Blind Union was founded and remains the link of hope for millions of blind people who otherwise will not have hope, will not have a voice, will not have access to a world that some of us know in greater comfort and security. But you need people to do that. And when we closed the Paris office in our early history, we were a long time now reestablishing a permanent office, a permanent secretariat, someone that's going to keep the rest of the organization and the thousands of people that can be a resource, that can be that link in every country of the world. And sitting at this table, and including Dr. Rowland and Sheikh Abdullah and the new president to be named tomorrow, we will probably have virtually been to most countries in the world, certainly all of the continents, and I'm sure would share this whole notion that, the World Blind Union has got to preserve and strengthen that capacity as a world body, because if we're not here, the blind of the world and the visually and partially sighted of the world and the deafblind of the world will not have a destination, will not have a voice, and will be even more generations to find that kind of equality and freedom. You can have all the human rights documents in the world, but if you can't make them live, the people that are disenfranchised are going to stay out there for far too long. So there's an urgency to this, and I think that urgency's got to be in the next generation, and we have to make it happen.
Thank you. Kiki, you have the last word.
Thank you. That was very nice. I think very much of wisdom have come from my predecessors now, and very much is said, and I have, of course, no objection to what is said. It's very, very wise. I also believe in that we need not only financial stability and possibilities for the World Blind Union. That is a hope for the future, a wish, and hopefully also a reality the years to come. I also think, like all of you have said, that create strong organization nationally is a must to keep us together, but also keep us even stronger. I know that we are one of the strongest disability organization or DPOs in the world. We are best organized if I compare to others. But still, we can be much, much better. And what we need to do is what David, in fact, say, and also the other colleagues of mine, that we need to focus very much on the individual capacity in the national organizations and make room for all of them to grow and become good leaders. There are so lots of very skilled people there. I was once in the meeting when Dr. Kenneth Jernigan created this to change what it means to be blind in Venezuela. That is something I think also is a challenge, or in not a challenge, but is something that we should look forward to. And each of you have had their good sayings and in a new area of new opportunities, and as you had it as a power of a dream, is wonderful words. But also, I wish that the future should be like nothing about us, without us, World Blind Union must be there. Thank you.
Thank you, Kiki. My thanks to all of you for taking the time after a very busy long day, very full long day, sharing your collective wisdom, thoughts, and ideas. Wonderful food for thought as we continue to reflect and plan over the next weeks and months and years. So before I pass it back to Chris for some closing comments, once again I wish to thank our four panelists, the past presidents of the World Blind Union, Sir Duncan Watson, got it right this time, from the United Kingdom, David Blythe from Australia, Euclid Harry from Canada, and Kiki Nordstrom from Sweden. Thank you all again so much for sharing your thoughts, sharing your lives with us. You shared many, many years with us as presidents, past presidents, and now sharing that your experience and wisdom. So thank you, and over to you, Chris.
Thank you, Penny, and presidents, thank you so much for coming, letting us have a chance to get to know you a little bit, sharing your accomplishments, your vision. In my mind, you truly have provided the dream that has drawn so many countries and so many blind people to be a part of the World Blind Union. Many of them don't know it. Many of them are unaware of what has happened in the leadership of the blind of their country. But it has touched their lives, and it has primarily because of what each of you has done. Not one of you said a word tonight about how much work being president is. We all know that it is. And it's a tribute to you that you've done this with open hearts, with enthusiasm. And thank you once again for coming tonight. It's a pleasure to have gotten to know you.